The Civil Justice Subcommittee will come to order. Julia, please call the roll.
Chair Robinson.
Here.
Vice Chair Snyder.
Here.
Ranking Member Arrington.
Here.
Representatives Beltran. Black.
Here.
Campbell.
Here.
Chamberlain.
Here.
Representative Daniels has been excused. Gant.
Here.
Coster.
Here.
Lopez.
Here.
Maggard has been excused. Maney.
Here.
McFarland.
Here.
Overdorf.
Yes, ma'am.
Roth. Saroy has been excused. Smith has been excused. A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Julia. I'd like to remind everyone to please silence their cell phones. As a reminder for our members, please ensure you turn your microphone on when you're speaking and off when you're finished. I'll also request that you please fill out a public appearance card if you intend to speak in front of this committee. Well, good morning. The gang's all back here. Welcome to our very first meeting of the Civil Justice Subcommittee for the 2024 legislative session. I am honored to once again serve as your chair and look forward to working with all of you on some very important issues. We're all back except for two. We have two new faces, and we're so pleased to have you all with us for this term. And I think I want to just start off by having you all introduce yourself, where you're from, where your district is located, and maybe your experience in the civil justice arena. Representative Coster, welcome.
Thank you, Chair. Tracy Coster. I represent House District 66, which is Northwest Hillsborough County. My experience with civil justice, I've been a lawyer for more years than I would care to admit, I guess 13 years at this point. I started out in a commercial litigation world doing business and contract disputes, and left that world after about 6 years, and have been practicing exclusively marital and family law for the last, whatever, 13 minus 6 is, 7 years, I guess. And that's what I do now. I started my own law firm about 18 months ago doing just that.
Great. Well, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Great. I believe our newest member of the Florida House of Representatives, Representative Chamberlain. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I am from Central Florida. My name is Ryan Chamberlain from District 24. That's about an hour north of Orlando in Horse Country. So it's the farmland part of Florida. Very excited to be here with you. My experience in civil justice would be, you know, as an entrepreneur and a businessman, but also as a son of an attorney for 50 years. I grew up around conversations around the table, was able to ask a lot of questions and participate and attend things that just helped me develop an interest in this topic at a very young age. So very excited to be here and very glad to be able to learn from some great people.
Great. And it's wonderful to have my vice chair, Vice Chair Snyder. You have any opening remarks?
Yes, sir. Glad to be here.
Great. And my ranking member Arrington, welcome back. Any opening remarks? Welcome. Great.
Actually one, Mr. Chair. If I just want to check and make sure that you have not assigned the appearance card duty reading to me for this session.
You know, a joke that never is going to get old, apparently. You never know what's going to happen in the subcommittee. Just be very mindful of that. So we're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to get a lot of work done. We were very busy last year. I would expect that to continue because there's a lot of important issues we have to solve on behalf of all Floridians. So excited to get to work. I'd also like to introduce our subcommittee staff for this session. To my right, Jordan Jones, our policy chief. Caitlin Mon is an attorney. Sarah Matthews is a civil justice attorney. Annie Leshko is a civil justice attorney. Julia Ramirez is our administrative assistant. And Tara Yeager is a fellow. Welcome. Welcome. As a reminder, our staff is here to help with any issues or questions that any member of this subcommittee has. If not the best, some of the best staff we have in the Florida House of Representatives. And they can tackle any issues, so please don't hesitate to contact them. Their doors are always open, and I know they welcome your questions and anything you need, because that's part of what they do best. So thank you for everything you do. As you may remember, this subcommittee was very busy last year. We heard many bills that were ultimately signed into law by the governor. To that end, I've invited the Lee County Clerk of Court, Kevin C. Carnes, to give a presentation on the implementation of 2023's best bill that someone carried in this room, House Bill 1419. Members, I'll open the floor to questions at the conclusion of Clerk Carnes' presentation, and I welcome you, Mr. Clerk, for being here. You are recognized.
Good morning, Chair Robinson. Thank you for your time. Thank you, Vice Chair Snyder and Ranking Member Arrington.
and to this entire committee for your time this afternoon or this morning. I know that I'm the last thing probably on some of your agendas to get home to your districts. So I'm honored to be joined by a team of fellow clerks across the state today. We've worked very hard on this presentation. It's about 3 hours long, so we're hoping to get you out at right on time, 1.5 hours. We really condensed it. So let's just jump right into it then. With that said, as Chair Robinson said, House Bill 1419 is something that was related to property fraud. It's something that's very important to clerks, not just for Lee County and the citizens that I serve, but across the entire state of Florida. And so just as some education, since we have some new members, about what property fraud is in our community, fraudsters are filing fake documents that convey real property to different owners without the real and proper owner's consent or knowledge. There's lots of different pathways fraudsters are doing to perpetrate that crime, but most often it's due to vacant land and unencumbered properties with those fake documents. The new owner can attempt to evict the rightful owner, sell or lease the property, place liens. It kind of gets darker and more dangerous for the real homeowner when this happens. And so that transaction happens through your local clerk of court or your county recorder's office when that document is filed into the official record. And as the law stands, at least for most clerks around the state, most clerks are not allowed to reject a deed that is fraudulent. Our job right now is to make sure that it meets the legal requirements of Florida statute and then put it into the official record. So the properties likely are listed on third-party sites that for under market rates, and so people think they're getting a really good deal, and they're really not, because the criminal has taken the money and given a false document to some unsuspecting person in a criminal enterprise, and then most of the individuals who fall victim to this crime don't get their tax bill. And so then they start calling local governments and trying to figure out what happened, but just to find out that they don't own their property. And how to unwind that is a very long, intensive challenge for somebody to get their property back when, in my personal opinion, they spend a lot of time, a lot of effort, and spend a lot of tax money on their most valuable asset. And so I think that we should be doing more in this space, and we have a couple of ideas for you all at the end of the presentation. But most of our community doesn't realize that title insurance is not a legal requirement for private land transactions. That's where the quick claim deed process comes into play. You can just take a document and transfer your interest in certain ways. And then, of course, we have private companies that offer title protection, in my personal opinion, are misleading. They're providing the same protection that clerk's offices are providing at a premium cost with the same records that we have. So there's a lot going on in property fraud, but I was able to find at least one story for every single member on this committee. And some of them were on all shapes and sizes, some of them upwards of millions of dollars. Someone I think had 11 properties. And so I have a couple of stories about property fraud that I had from fellow clerks across the state as I was driving up here. And if we have any questions about that, I'll be happy to take them. But it is real. It is happening across the state. And it is happening in your districts. But when you talk about property fraud, it's a very challenging space. It has a very impactful impact on the real estate professions. You got title companies, real estate professionals, lawyers, of course, the clerks. It's just a lot around it. And one of the bigger challenges is that property transactions can take place 24/7, 365. I mean, people can be in different time zones, different states, and even different countries. And so trying to get your head around how that's happening and how you curtail it is difficult when you're looking at potentially a worldwide property transaction. County recorders today have a ministerial role. I said that before. There's now four items that we check on a deed to make sure that it meets the statutory minimum requirements. A fifth one will be added to that list come January with the addition of the witness address from 1419. But really, if we knew that it was a fraudulent document, we have to accept it. And even if you did know that it was a fraudulent document, it's really difficult to know what a fraudulent document is. When you're looking at a piece of paper, what specifically makes you think that it's fraudulent? Is it the signature? There's a lot of questions around how to know that it's a fraudulent document so you can do something more intense to protect that transaction's integrity. The tracking of the data is really problematic, and I focus on this one a lot because we can't size the problem today. There's really no what I call anchor on saying how widespread is this problem today across the state of Florida, because there's too many variables. The crimes are potentially reported to individual municipalities and sheriff's office, who then go to different circuit state attorney's offices and have different clerks. And so having this similar data point that brings us all together so we have an anchor on knowing that we're making a difference is problematic, and there's too many variables. And one example of that is 813-535, and you'll see that later in my slide. That's a statute that law enforcement typically uses to investigate these crimes, but it considers all property that a person might own, not just real property. And so when you're asking law enforcement for data, you're looking at everything that was reported under that statute, not just real property. So that's just one example. And then, of course, the last one is clerk's offices don't have cameras in public spaces to capture criminals in the act. That's a very complex space because clerks are in historic courthouses and have lots of partners that we have to work through. But that was important to law enforcement because even if they know there's a fraudulent document, they need to have evidence of the person presenting it to the clerk's office, which is actually the crime. You've tendered the fake document over to the clerk's office as a fake document. But it's just a challenge for law enforcement that we're trying to work together on. Of course, Representative Robinson had great leadership last session, as did Senator Bradley in the Senate about this problem. And I'm not going to read this slide, but it had a lot of great elements in it. You're here to hear me talk about the pilot program, which I'll get into in just a second. But of course, we have the mandatory recording notification service, a quiet title action in a simplified form. And then, of course, we have the new deed requirement for witnesses. So these are great steps in furtherance of this community problem, and I'm excited to work with you all on potential ideas going into this session. Clerks working together, we have 64 of 67 clerk's offices that have already have that recording notification service live today. So we created a statewide single access point for individuals that have properties in multiple counties to make this process easier for our communities to sign up for this service. That QR code works. If you want to sign up, I encourage all of you to protect your properties today because you're probably not exempt from 119 disclosures. And so this service is live, I believe, in all of your districts. And we are working with the remaining clerks. They are on track to be live by the effective date, which is July of 2024. Lee County fraud statistics, I put this together just because I'm looking for that anchor that says, hey, we're moving in the right direction. I specifically, as the 1419 was going through the session last year, had 93 allegations of fraud across 19 counties. And that was just self-reporting clerk's offices to me as a data point. But I did reach out to my state attorney, the sheriff's department, and two of my police chiefs asking for data. And it's a really complex, I shared that challenge before, using 817-535. The state attorney's office specifically has investigated 20 cases. The sheriff's had 14. And then the municipalities was a little bit more of a challenge because of their individual systems. But we have some good data, but hopefully we get to what I call that anchor point, so then we know that we're making a difference. The Property Fraud Alert Service in Lee County has been live since 2019. We have 550,000 parcels of land. We're one of the most plotted lands in the nation. And you can see the active registrations that we've had since 2019 is 45,000. And so we have a lot of work to do in Lee County, but it comes back to public education, knowing that we provide this service to our community. We're just not getting it out there quick enough, but you can see, at least in my tenure of being clerk in the last year and a half, 87% of those registrations were from 2022 and 2023. So I'm very proud of the work that we're doing together. And of course, the number of alerts being sent out, it is working. People are getting the notice and they are taking action on it, which is exactly what we need them to do. So what that did was shorten the time frame of not getting your tax bill in November to within 24 hours of a fraudulent document being filed. And the quicker law enforcement can investigate, the quicker they can potentially have some successes. But you're here to talk about I'm here to talk about the pilot program. So it only applies in Lee County right now. And it required, as part of the bill, for the presenters of a deed to give us their government-issued ID along with that deed. And the concept was today, or in the past, when a fraudulent deed was given to the clerk's office, law enforcement would start an investigation and everything was fake. The signatures were fake, the names were fake. So law enforcement really couldn't have a breadcrumb trail to complete their investigation. So the idea behind the ID was to give law enforcement a more solid footing on who was a party to that transaction so they can go and do their investigation. And so we take that document and we put the recording instrument number and basically match it up to that deed. So then law enforcement kind of knows what IDs go to what deeds. But those deeds, the IDs are not placed in the official record. And that was a really important part of 1419, something that we hope to address going into this session. Right now, those government-issued IDs are public record. So in theory, someone can come get those documents and do worse things with it. And so hopefully we address that gap going into this session. But the IDs, and these are the specific rules. I'm not going to go into them ad nauseum. But we have to get clear IDs. They have to be in paper format so we can do any redactions for 119. But the big part is that we give the public the ability to pre-redact any information from their IDs that they feel uncomfortable with. And the what they can't redact is just their name, their address, their photo, and their signature. Those are the critical elements that law enforcement needs to conduct their investigation. And then specifically for Lee County, what we're doing is we're making sure that the IDs that we collected match up to the names on the deed for the grantor and the grantees. So you don't have John Smith on one document and Jane Doe on another one. We actually do a correlation of that. So these are the types of IDs that we currently accept. It's pretty standard list. I won't go over it. But I did learn through this process there's something called a matricula consular ID card that is a government-issued ID. And so we have gotten some of those statistics later on in the presentation. The law applies to in-person and e-recorded documents. In-person transactions over the last 3 months have been successful. E-recorded have some challenges, and I'll share those later. But as part of the pilot program, the bill does allow the clerk to reject a deed when we don't get the government-issued ID, which has been a really helpful element of the pilot program. And then we have to share a report with you all by December of 2025 on the success of this program. And as I shared before, we're 3 months in. But there's my contact information and my team of experts if you have specific questions about the deed program. My team has been incredibly amazing at getting this program live for our community. There are some statistics. I'm not going to read these out to you, but I did bold in red the items that I think you might be interested in. It's just the total number of deeds that we've accepted, the total number of deeds that have been rejected, and I put a percentage in there. And so if you focus on August of 2023, which is our very first month where the program was operational, we only rejected 160 deeds out of a total 1,000 deeds, which I think is a pretty good ratio of success, knowing that it's a brand new requirement and we're the only county in the state doing it. And then when you track that over September and October, it dropped by half, which means, in my opinion, the program is being adopted and people are understanding what the new rules are. And so as far as rejection reasons go, the larger one is people just not having their ID, which is the big part of the pilot program. What we're trying to get into in the next couple of months is what I'm calling a cure rate, how many people were rejected and how many are now coming back to comply with the rules and how many have not. And so I'm thinking that might be an element of tracking potential fraud for people who just abandoned the transaction. But hopefully going into the next year, we have a lot more data on the success of this program. Overwhelmingly positive reaction from Lee County citizens on it. They were a little nervous about their ID being part of the record, but they are incredibly grateful that we are doing something in this space because we don't go more than two news cycles before we see another instance of property fraud happening in our community and people wanting to protect their asset. We had a few operational interpretational issues from attorneys and real estate professionals, and they were well warranted. We work closely with those individuals. They are a large driver of e-recorded documents, so we want to make sure that we're not disrupting the flow of documents for the property industry. We realize that we are an integral part of that process. And so we're working with them on that. The biggest challenge right now is the word presenter was not defined in statute, so there was some confusion about who that actually was. Some individuals were interpreting it as the person who was taking the document from point A to point B. In Lee County, just for what we believe to be the presenter was all parties listed as grantors and grantees. And we did get a minor pushback on that. and for good cause. And I'll go into some of the reasons why. But the other observation was not all IDs contained addresses, which, again, was not a huge issue. But if the goal was to make sure law enforcement had a starting point with doing an investigation, it just prolonged their steps to do. So my staff and I have been working on this for the last 3 months, as I shared before, and we've come up with some questions that need clarification. We're not looking for that clarification today. It's just things that we're working through as the pilot program. The big one that we've asked ourselves is, if we're collecting IDs from grantors and grantees, does that include all parties on the deed, so which would be notaries and witnesses, or is it just the people who have an interest in the land transaction itself? I don't know if we have a position statement per se, but it's just something I think we should talk about as we work to fight this problem. The second one is what, this has been a big challenge, is what IDs should businesses, nonprofits, and other entities present? And so that also applies to land owned by the government. Right now, we're treating all those parties the same because we didn't have any guidelines in the statute to say what we should do. But the initial thought was to go with SunBiz. Well, then we learned from CFO Petronas' office that there's potential criminal enterprises with people stealing businesses. And so we're just looking for some guidance and some ideas on how we can do this and make sure that it's an effective pilot program, but also make sure that we're not making it harder on these entities to do their work. And the last one is a clerk-related one, but I'm not sure if this committee is aware, but documents that are given to your county recorder, your clerk's offices, are permanent records. We have those since the inception of our counties. And we think it's a valid question to say, should someone's ID be considered a permanent record? So just a ministerial clerk factoid there. Next steps for Lee County, we would like to get our e-recorded transactions up on board. Our target is January. A few snags along the way with e-recording, because we are the only county in the state that's doing this. Those e-recording vendors are a little hesitant to change their technology and their operational processes for one clerk's office for a program that is technically set to expire in 2025. And so, well warranted, we're working with them, but it's been a little bit of a hiccup. I really want to work with our law enforcement partners on potential success stories. We haven't gotten there just yet on fighting it. But we're pretty close, I believe, because I had some stories in Lee County. I believe if the e-recorded submissions were there with the ID, it might have been a deterrent, but not quite yet. And then, of course, we're going to advocate for legislation in 2024 to address some of these challenges. I want to pause for a second before I go into the concepts and share a story that I heard on the way here from Clerk Matt Reynolds from Putnam County. I was driving up, and he had called me, and he was doing a tax deed sale for his county, and he got a call from an FDLE agent, and he said that there were some potential fraudulent cases for a tax deed sale, and that he needed to remove them from the sale, which he did. And then he went to investigate it, and he found out that these criminals are letting a transaction not paying taxes. So they're filing a fraudulent document, not paying the taxes, and it's going to the tax deed and tax certificate process, and then they're pocketing the surplus from that tax deed sale. And so I think right now, through their investigation in Putnam County, they have 11 cases just in that particular instance. Those individuals were arrested, but law enforcement is still doing their investigation. And I think that why I share that is there's so many avenues that these criminals are using. I'm used to the third-party site, and I'm used to the fake documents for what I'll call familial fraud, where the wife is doing it to the son, or the husband and wife are doing it. I mean, but he shared something completely new, that a fraudster has created a brand new avenue to perpetrate this fraud, and the only cost to that criminal would be the recording fees. And so the whole purpose of a tax deed sale is to make sure the government makes whole on those property taxes. Well, if the recording fee is $10, and the property goes to sale, and there's a profit of $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. Once the government's made whole, the proceeds go back to the rightful owner, which was all perpetrated on a fake document. And so I think that there's a lot of good stories that my fellow clerks have about this issue across the state, and I'm excited to work on some ideas that we believe close those loopholes. Pilot program adjustments, there's a lot of words on this screen. I'll be happy to answer questions on it later. The big ones are taking the grantor and grantee and talking about people that have fiduciary responsibilities to people with land ownership. Attorneys are saying, hey, I already have that today. I'm already verifying their ID and their identity. Should I be presenting that along with my transaction? Valid question. The big thing that I would like to share is Hillsborough and Miami-Dade counties are interested in becoming part of the pilot program. I've worked with both of those clerks. They have different land record systems, and they have bigger counties, so I believe that would influence the e-recording market to come and to play with the e-recording technology. So that's going to be great. But we do have more challenges to address outside of the pilot program. The big one would be a public records exemption for emails, addresses, cell phone numbers, and the like of our public and their government-issued IDs that they're giving us as part of this transaction. And that's because we don't want criminals to make public records requests and get the information to now perpetrate further fraud. And so there are some potential bills out there, I believe, that have been filed by members of your chamber on both sides that address some of these issues, and they are a great start at addressing. We have some feedback and ideas, and we'll work with those members, but we're very excited that we're making some progress on this. There's also a bill about requiring in-person notaries to maintain a journal. That's filed, and you all will probably consider that in this committee. That sub-bullet there is important, at least to Lee County. It's to talk about whether a notary should sign as a witness on a deed. So currently law says, at least come January, you're required to have two witnesses and a notary. Right now, a notary is signing for one of, or could potentially sign as one of those witnesses. And why that's important is it's making this incrementally harder for people to commit this crime. So we're not trying to make notaries' lives more difficult than they already are, but we're just trying to put these layers of difficulty on these fraudsters to make sure it's not quite so simple to conduct. And this is where my most recent property fraud story comes from Lee County. We had an individual come into our offices and wanted to record a deed, and he didn't have his wife's ID. So we rejected the deed under the pilot program. He left, went and e-recorded the document, and we didn't have the technology there. A couple days later, the wife called and said, "This isn't my signature. I didn't sign this deed." We did a mini review of the document, and we realized that the notary signed as one of the witnesses, and the notary was his best friend. And so all they needed to do technically was find one other person that was not aware of what they were trying to do, and by that point it was too late. Luckily, now with 1419, the wife has some recourse, but she's got to go back to the court. She's got to prove that she was the rightful owner, that the document wasn't fraudulent, and then get a court order for the clerk to remove that from the record. So witnesses are a big part of this conversation, and they've been great partners. So that one would be a good one. And the next big one that I'm really excited about is closing the loophole within 695.26. That's just making out-of-state recording instruments follow Florida law. So you can be 5 miles over the Florida-Georgia border and be exempt from Florida requirements. And one example of that is Georgia law may not require two witnesses. So in a sense, Lee County would accept that deed or that instrument with no witnesses. And so that happens not just around the country, that happens for any foreign documents as well. So you can have a deed that was executed in Italy, notarized in Egypt, and the land is in Florida, and it's exempt from Florida law, and we're required to put it into the document. So closing that loophole, I think, would make things a tiny bit better, at least for Lee County, Florida residents. It might present a challenge to people across the nation and the country. In the world, but it would probably protect our citizens' assets a little bit stronger than is happening today. These are what I call low-hanging fruit. These are things that I think we can talk about as partners and come to some solutions that I think would be the next step in the process. And then this slide is the bigger items that need a lot more discussion, a lot more time to kind of synthesize with it, because it really can be transformative change, but we need a good portion of time to talk through this. And it's about the inability to reject deeds that appear fraudulent. What does that look like? I've talked to a lot of people about this. It's not as easy as it sounds, because right now the clerk's office is the last step in the process, which means money's already changed hands. People have already done their work. So we have to talk about that. The next one is some partnerships with the property appraiser and talking about legal descriptions and parcel IDs being on that document, really so you can trace back some fraud if you needed to. Law enforcement aren't title industries. They're not used to doing title searches. So that might be helpful to them. It might not, but I think we need to engage them in that conversation. And the last one is, if this pilot program was to become part of normal day-to-day businesses for clerks and county recorders, should we start looking at signature matching technologies and the responsibilities of that? I think that's a really big question. I think it needs a lot of conversation to it, but it could potentially help us move the needle in the right direction. So with that, I thank you for your time and partnership in fighting property fraud. I'm honored to lead this program on behalf of Lee County and the state of Florida. I think it's gone exceptionally well. I'm really excited to get other clerks in this space to make sure that the issues and challenges are not just regional, but maybe in different parts of the state. But I would be happy to answer any questions from the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. And
did I get you out in 45 minutes? I mean, an hour and a half?
Great job. Yep. I think it's important for the committee to know kind of how we got here. And we were drafting the bill, and there were just so many things. The speaker was very interested in this topic, and I had several conversations with him. And one of the main things we talked about was proof of identification. Almost everything in life, you have to show ID on something. And the reason why this pilot program was put into the bill was because of your great efforts in this space. And we talked probably half a dozen times, and I ran out of time. I ran out of time last legislative session, and I didn't necessarily feel comfortable making the presentation of ID a statewide thing, because I didn't know if it would. I wanted an expert like you to dig in and to figure out, is that something that is worthwhile, or is that just going to interrupt the real estate economy? And so I would like to dig into that a little bit, because that's a very critical piece of this pilot program. So let me give you the example, and I think the members kind of, and you actually gave the example with the husband and I would presume the ex-wife, but who knows if they're still married. So I'm the attorney that drafts the deed. So my name is on the deed, and I'm presenting it to the clerk's office. So clearly my intent in the pilot program was to have me, when I show up or when I e-record, to require you to have my ID be presented, because that's one more step that I have to show as a fraudster, and one more piece of information that you would have to give to law enforcement to track me down and to figure out what went wrong. What I frankly didn't think about, and how do I say this? You may be interpreting the bill broadly, which is the law broadly, is whether or not only should you require my ID, but let's say Representative Beltran in the deed is selling his property to Representative Roth, you're now requiring both of their, I believe in your presentation you said this, you're requiring both of their IDs to be presented as well. So I'm curious, and maybe you go back to your ex-wife or the husband-wife example, do you think that's a good approach for us to take? Because obviously, what is your clerk verifying? They obviously can't see those two people. Your clerk can see me, so you can say, oh yeah, that's the same person, and I'm gonna get this information. But they can't see Mike and they can't see Rick. I'm just requiring those two identification documents. So I'm curious kind of your thoughts kind of globally on that issue.
That's a great question, Chair. I think what I first went to is what you had mentioned in your specific example is whether you're the grantor or the grantee. And so if you're the person who's going to assume the property, you have the most interest in that, but there's no requirement that the deed be filed by a grantor or a grantee. So you could potentially be getting it from somebody who wasn't part of the fraud versus somebody who is part of the fraud. And I think that that's the challenge of this, is that I think those criminals know the loopholes, so to speak, and I think that's why we went with all copies of the IDs, because then there's no escape route, so to speak. Because if you went to a third party site and think you got a good deal and you gave over a sum of money to the real homeowner, and then you come to the clerk's office and give me your ID and your deed, I didn't capture the seller's information. I didn't get their ID. That's who we need. They're the one who actually did the wrong act, not the person who was coming. Now, granted, they are tendering over a fraudulent deed, but I'd make an argument they probably don't know it's fraudulent. And so I hear your point on that, but I think that our purpose in interpreting the law that way was to make sure that there was no escape hatch for potential criminals. And it could lead to fake documents being created, but I'd be open to the committee's advice on the operations of the pilot program.
Representative Costa, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I don't think presenting IDs is too onerous when you're doing a big land transaction. I feel like there's so much that goes into it. But my question, I'm curious, because that's one of the balancing acts is slowing down the real estate market. Have you, in the pilot, have you seen a slowing down of recording deeds, or is it about the same?
Mr. Carnes, you're recognized.
Thank you. It was certainly a concern of ours, and what we have found is it did not. We only rejected the 160, and so we didn't feel that that was prohibitive on behalf of those parties, but they also have an interest in getting that document filed with the clerk's office. So I think that the parties to the transaction were curing those relatively quickly. I don't think we've seen a specific or measurable delay in the actual recording process.
Ranking Member Arrington, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have two questions, if you will allow. Mr. Clerk, can you give us a little bit, I think it was in the early slides, you talked about the third-party title protection groups and there being a lot of bad actors there, and I don't know a lot about that space. Can you tell us a little bit more?
Mr. Clerk, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Let's see if I can get there. This one, the last bullet? Okay. So there are companies out there that advertise recording notification services basically at a private option for citizens, but they are using local government documents and local government information in order to get that. So they're saying that they can solve title fraud. Well, they can't solve it right now any better than a clerk's office can, because you can't stop the recordation from happening right now because people are filing them either electronically or coming in person. So if they're sending out their recording notification service, it's because the bad act has already happened. And so they're promising some legal protections that I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know if they're there. But I did call those companies and said, walk me through how this works. And I wasn't able to get any answers. And so I tell my community that that is a private option for them, that if they want to pay a premium for a service the clerk's office provides, that is their choice, but their taxpayer dollars have already paid for it. And so I use that as an education point, but that's the history on that bullet.
Ranking Member, you're recognized.
Thank you. And on a separate note, you said that the community's reception to the pilot program has been positive. I was hoping you could give a little bit more about that. And are you all doing outreach in regards to it, or is it just folks are finding about it when they're coming to do the service?
I think it's great, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Not used to that. That was a great question. I think it's a little bit of both. When it comes to real estate professionals, they interact with my office regularly. So they understand what those rules are. They know my staff's name. And so it's a very symbiotic relationship. When it comes to quitclaim deeds and what I'll call milestones in someone's life that makes them come do this transaction, they're not aware of the pilot program rules. So it does have some public outreach to it, but most individuals don't know when they need to file one of those documents. It's typically upon the death or separation or some other milestone in their life. And so they're coming in. And so we try to work with those members of the public to cure their issue. And so a lot of the time it's just the education in the moment. It's easier when they're in person because they understand. You can tell them the problems. E-recording is going to present its own challenges, and so we'll have to brainstorm on ways to make that happen. But once people understand the problem that we're attempting to solve and that we're doing this on their behalf, they are extremely grateful.
Representative Campbell, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your presentation. My question is in regards to third parties. Does the pilot program focus on targeting some of these third-party sites?
Mr. Clerk, you're recognized.
No, sir. It does not.
Mr. Campbell, you're recognized. Mr. Campbell, you're recognized.
And based off of your, thank you, Mr. Chairman, based off your explanation that you given regarding the legalities behind what the third-party sites can do, if moving forward and implementing this into a full out, is there any way that there can be some type of work done to really focus on improving the securities around the third-party sites and what they're capable of doing as far as if people are going out there and really trying to go through these sites, what they are, what the measures in keeping their identity safe so that it's not stolen as well?
Mr. Clerk, you recognize.
Yes, sir. I think there's certainly some space to talk about potential ideas on that. This happens to be one of my personal pet peeves, so I would love to work with the committee on potential ideas for third-party sites like that.
Representative Black, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to say what great policy this is. It's excellent to watch this evolve, and it's being done in what I think is a wise and thoroughly considered way. I have a question. You had indicated that 64 of the 67 clerks now have a recording notification service in place. Are the remaining three clerks on track to implement their respective recording notification services by the deadline?
Mr. Clerk, you're recognized.
Yes, sir, they absolutely are. We have 8 months until July 1st, and there's only three counties, and they're more rural counties, and I believe some of them were impacted by the hurricane recently. And I think they also have some operational concerns or issues with vendors, but there should be no issues that I'm aware of on reaching the goal for 67 clerks by July 1st, 2024.
Vice Chair Snyder, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks again for the presentation this morning. If I could, Chairman, just if I could start with not so much as a question, but thanks for putting that QR code, and if you could share that with the rest of us. I think so often, members, it's easy to get, you know, we get down in the weeds of these important conversations, but let's not lose sight of that. That's a key takeaway. I just did the registration. It took me about 60 seconds, and you know, I think if we could make sure we share that with our constituents, it's a great way to protect our pocketbooks. So again, thank you for sharing that. As we just kind of replay the tape again from last year, and again, Chairman, thank you for your leadership on that bill. I was just curious, when we look at the quitclaim deeds, have any of the forms has anyone attempted to record a quitclaim without using the form that we required in the bill last year?
Mr. Clerk, you're recognized.
That's a great question, Mr. Chair. I would have to ask my team that question and get back to you.
Thank you.
You good?
Good.
Representative Gant, welcome. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Clerk. Thank you so much for this presentation. Clerk Fernandez-Barking told me that you're a great guy. So I came in expecting a lot, and I got a lot. So I have a few questions. My first question would be, is there an appetite to set up cameras in public areas to monitor, like, individuals who come in and try to record a fraudulent deed? And if so, what is the feasibility of that?
Ms. Clerk, you're recognized.
Thank you for the question. Please give all the best to your rep over there. This is a great question. It's certainly important to law enforcement, but this is a massively complex issue because it gets into what counties are required to pay for versus the historic elements of some clerk's offices being in historic buildings and the infrastructure of that, who would host that data, how long would we keep it? There's lots of questions about that. And so me personally, I think we should get that anchor for the data on how much this is happening before we talk about such a large investment. But I do know it's an essential piece for law enforcement on holding individuals accountable. So I think we're open to having that question. I just think it needs a lot more talk with local and state partners.
Representative Gant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that answer. The data was a part of my concern. My next question would be, to your knowledge, has anyone subject to the pilot program refused to present an ID? And how was that handled, if so?
Mr. Clerk, you're recognized.
Thank you for the question. Thank you, Chair. Yes, we have. So this is the statistics. It's that bottom right-hand chart that we've rejected it. So you can see we've rejected about 100+ deeds total just for IDs not having being presented with the deed. What we're trying to do is match up whether these people came back and cured the reason why we're rejected. And it's difficult because of the individual processes. Currently, when you record a document, it's a one-to-one transaction between you and the customer. If you reject that and you come back, that's another one-to-one relationship. My team's trying to figure out how you can marry those two together to make sure that the issue was cured. So I'm not quite sure I have a good answer for you on that, but I'm hoping throughout the course of the pilot program we can figure out those challenges.
And your office has done a great job. Believe me, I got a lot of calls in August and September of 23. Robinson, what are you doing? All these deeds are getting rejected in Lee County. What's your rogue clerk doing? And I said, we'll get the word out. Things will be fine. Let's let him do his thing. So thank you for that.
Thank you for the support.
Representative Gant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regarding the government IDs, I know when you open a probate case and you file your notice of confidentiality, some things can be redacted. Is there currently, because the clerks, you all determine if it's actual confidential, could that be part of your list when recording deeds, that a notice of confidentiality or something to that effect can be used to redact the government information on the government IDs? Because essentially I think that they will become part of the record, and it would allow that measure of verifying who the signees are and the presenter is of the deed when they're recording it, have their IDs taken, and then you all will have the ability to redact it. So if someone goes to access the deed, they couldn't see the information because it'll be redacted.
Mr. Clerk, you're recognized.
Thank you for the question. Yes, the technicality with that would be you would put the responsibility on the person filing it. And so you could potentially have some people protected and not everybody with that process. That would be up to your discretion on whether you want it to be citizen-driven or public-driven, whereas the exemption would just apply to everybody. So regardless of who came and asked, we would deny them that request. But Mr. Chair, if I may,
sure.
It's great that we're talking about the parties within a deed and securing their information. What I'm finding, or at least hearing from my clerks across the state, is that people are also photoshopping the notary stamps and taking those and copying and pasting them on other documents. And so I think we should talk about whether there's some space to do something with notary stamps, because it's not necessarily the parties to the transaction as it is the witnesses and notaries as well. I think they're the safety net, so to speak. And so I think we should talk about witnesses and notaries as part of that conversation.
Well, it's very challenging. Sometimes a notary is involved in the fraud.
Yes.
I'm a notary. I keep my stamp in my desk drawer, but I guess someone could come in and steal my stamp. Or guess what? All these deeds are imaged, and you can see the notary stamp, and there's some technology, I'm sure, that you can somehow pull that stamp and put it on another deed, and there you go. So, yeah, we have to continue, I believe, to look at the notary system. So with that, Representative Beltran, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Clerk, for your presentation. I want to follow up on two things you've discussed with my colleagues. One is these abandoned transactions that you referred to, like where you were, I guess you were trying to smoke out what the rate of fraud was, and you were inferring that those abandoned transactions may have been the fraudulent ones because they didn't come back. I guess my question is, have those been referred to law enforcement for investigation? I mean, especially at the beginning of the pilot program, I might think the criminals are not up to date on the new requirements, just like everyone else, and I guess in the real estate community in your county. And has there been any luck in finding any of these criminals by investigating the abandoned transactions?
Mr. Clerk, you're recognized.
Thank you for the question. To my knowledge, no, because right now there's no parameter on how long they have to cure that rejection. And so it may take someone a couple of hours to go get a copy of an ID versus someone who needs to go and get a much more complex relationship. So that may take them another couple of days. I do think that's an interesting concept, though, which is to look at those non-cured rejected deeds and see what you can do with them. But currently, right now, we are not reporting those to law enforcement.
Representative Beltran, you recognize.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman. I just have one more question, which is about, you were talking about title protection, and there was a slide, was one of your earlier slides. It said that there's title insurance is not required, and then you said something to the effect that title protection is essentially duplicative of what the clerks, or at least what your office is doing now with the notification. I just want to make sure I understand. Title insurance is usually required if you have a mortgage, I think, right? So that's the purpose of the title insurance, and then the lawyer does the search, and then there's a surety, and the lawyer gets most of the money, I think, and then you have like an insurance. There's a search component, and then there's an insurance component, I think. Are you saying that that's duplicative? I don't think that's what you're saying. I think you're saying that these notifications that duplicate what was in Chair Robinson's bill, those are the parts that are duplicative and surplusage as to what your office is doing. I just want to get some clarification on that.
Mr. Clerk, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. Yes, it's not meant to be duplicative. but title insurance is really a tool for professional industries and professional real estate transactions, not private land transactions. So someone who's doing this on their own, whether they're doing it from a third-party site or to a family member or to a friend, that title insurance protection is a buyer beware sort of concept, that you're doing this without knowing your legal interests with it. And so the title insurance and the professional world is using that to secure their interest in that with the exchange of money. But I think the normal consumer doesn't know that they need to think about that before they take steps to record the document.
Representative Roth, you recognize.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, Chair, thank you for this meeting today and this presentation that we've been given. It's a little, it's kind of exciting, actually, that we're reviewing one of the great bills that this committee got passed last year. I really was looking forward to this meeting today. My question, I think, was partially answered by Representative Beltran's question, but so I'm looking for some comfort here. Part of the comfort is that that the counties are doing the notification service. The other comfort is if you have a home and you are encumbered, you have a mortgage, that the likelihood of that scam occurring goes way down, and that, I guess that was because of title insurance. Somebody is doing the search.
Mr. Clerk, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question. I think there's a reasonable assumption. I don't think that you could say definitively that, because remember, when a document is filed, the clerk is not doing anything other than looking at the legal requirements of that document and putting it into our system. So if you're filing a quitclaim deed on a property that has a mortgage, that has implications for the people listed in those documents. The clerk's office is not doing any sort of verification on that. I think that, so yes, I think it should give you comfort in the sense that I don't think that's part of the criminal enterprise's immediate focus right now, but in theory, it could still happen because they're filing false documents.
President Roth, you're recognized.
So you said something very interesting, and I wanted you, just two things you said that I didn't think I fully captured the thought. The first one, you said, even if we know or even if we think it's a fraudulent document, there's things that we can't do. Could you kind of go into that a little bit more? Because that sounds like, you know, where we need to be going is to plug that hole.
Mr. Clerk, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question. I think that needs a lot of time and space to talk about. I presented this exact same presentation to the Florida Land and Title Association on Monday of this week, and they saw the exact same slides. And that industry specifically needs to talk about that because they've already done their work and their due diligence associated to it. So if a clerk or property appraiser is rejecting something, we got to talk about what that process looks like and what that means to those individual parties. I think that it's great to start there and say that's probably a zero-risk approach to this. So that's the first challenge, is what is the impact to the people in the transaction. And the second piece would be, how would a clerk or county recorder know the document is fraudulent? And so I think it's important to have those conversations and maybe set some ground rules, because it would also be important that clerks and county recorders do this consistently as the program expands.
And that's a great question, Representative Roth, because as the clerk said, they can't reject a deed but for certain specific legal reasons, but they have no discretion. So if it meets those five factors for a deed, they've got to record it. So it would be interesting, because obviously it gives in the real estate industry some consternation that, oh, you're just going to reject a deed because the signature looks weird, or it was put on blue paper and not white paper. But I think maybe we could have some sort of definition or some sort of additional factor that could give you some discretion, just and also balance the fact that you can't reject something for anything.
Mr. Chair, if I may?
Yeah, sure.
Do you remember the story that I told you about the individual who came in, did not present his deed, and then went to the e-recording? And so we used that as a case example to find out what would happen if we would have rejected his e-recording. And what we found was it's actually more legally complex, because the lawyers may appreciate that, because now he would have had a certified copy of something that we would have already accepted. And so now it would be inserting the clerk inside the question of, well, which document prevails? Is it the copy that he got through the e-recording transaction or the document that the person is holding? And so I think it gets really legally challenging to talk about it. I think it's a great idea, but I think you got to talk about those rules and the system that supports those rules to make sure it's doing the right thing by all parties listed on the deed.
Representative Roth, recognized.
One more question. Yeah. So I will make a comment, then I have a different question. The comment is, it just seems logical that we need to have some ability to pause. I don't know what that means. Almost, in my mind, it almost thinks, gee, couldn't you call a lawyer and say, hey, here's a case you might want to, I don't know. I don't know what the thought is, but it just seems like there ought to be a ability to pause when you think something may be going wrong. So my next question, sir, my last question is, you said there were four items that were required now, and the fifth one will be required. Could repeat again what that fifth item was again?
Mr. Clark, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a new component for witnesses to have an address on the deed effective January of 2024.
For the witnesses to have?
For the witnesses. That is correct.
And interestingly, Representative Roth, I got some heartache from my law partners on that. They're like, that's one more thing that we can miss in a closing. And at least my perspective was a witness to a deed is one of the most important things you can do. And putting your address that, yes, I'm witnessing this, and this is where I live, or this is my post office box, provides that sort of security, at least in my opinion. So, but thank you for mentioning that.
Mr. Chair, if I may, that same question applies to a notary. So that may be something to talk about, of whether you should record the address of the notary somewhere. Because in Florida, there is a database where you can go in and look for Florida notaries. But if you're recording a Georgia deed, they might not have a database of notaries. And so just another consideration for this group.
Next up, Representative Chamberlain, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the information, Clerk. Great topic. Regarding the pilot program, I know it's a new program. I know it's just getting going here. But has it led to any identification of anybody that's committed fraudulent title transfers? And have we been able to find some of these people?
Ms. Clark, you're recognized.
Thank you for the question. Outside of that one individual that we knew, we were able to trace back that we knew, based upon the wife's claim that it was not her signature, we were able to trace that back. And so I have to go ask my team what we did with that. So hopefully, I think we're a little too early on in the process to know how successful it's going to be, but this was a great use case in Lee County where we gave the new summary procedures to the victim. We were able to do some research to see if this individual was not following the rules of the pilot program. So I think it's going to do its job, maybe given another couple of months. So maybe in another 3 to 6 months, we'll have some solid use cases and success stories about how this helped.
Thank you.
Representative McFarland, you recognize.
So I'm looking at your statistics, and you have between a 5 and a 15% rejection rate on deeds. So between 5 and 15%, of all deeds are rejected, and that yielded one fraudulent title claim?
Mr. Clerk, you're recognized.
Thank you for the question that we know of. I mean, because if you were the victim of a crime today, if you're not registered for the recording notification service, you could potentially not know you're a victim until you don't get your tax bill. If you are registered for the recording notification service, you'd find out within 24 hours of the document being filed. But as I showed in my statistics, There's a big discrepancy just in Lee County. You have 550,000 plots of land, but only 45,000 people registered. And if you'll remember, this committee wanted the ability for people to register multiple names and multiple properties. So that 45,000 is not a direct correlation to 550,000 parcels of land. So I hear your point, but I think there's some operational challenges on using that particular data to know if it's a success.
Representative McFarland, you're recognized.
So the deeds rejected percentage, you don't track for, like, who came back and cured it?
Ms. Clark, you're recognized.
Thank you for the question. My team is currently working on that to see if it's possible.
Good. Next up, Representative Koster. You're recognized.
Thank you. And forgive me if this is a silly question, because I wasn't here when we worked this bill last session, but for these uncured or rejected deeds, what data are you collecting? Like, if I come in and I'm going to record a deed and I don't have the IDs, are you collecting the names of the parties still? and then just sort of that staying out in the abyss until it's either corrected or uncorrected, or you, because otherwise I don't know how you would use that date. Yeah.
Mr. Clerk, you recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question. Exactly the point. What I think we're doing today is completely rejecting the transaction and the document. So I think that's part of the challenge, is we don't have any data to reconcile with the cured. And so we're going to talk about that, the pros and cons of keeping some data in order to do that. But then you're getting into the, well, it's a legally tendered document at the time you got it. I have the authority to reject it. I don't know if that gives me the authority to keep some information on the document and then reject the rest of it. So I think it's complex, and I think that this pilot program was a great idea because these instances are giving us the ability, because clerks have never really thought about these things before. It was either it had the four elements or it didn't, and then we moved on. And so this has really cracked open some really great, interesting questions on behalf of our community and going, is this fixable or workable or not? And that this is the sort of stuff that would be put in that report that you all have asked for at the end of 2025.
Representative Costa, you recognize.
Thank you, Chair. Do you, within the pilot program, as the clerk, have the discretion to decide to start collecting that data, or is that something that would have to be specified by us?
Mr. Clerk, you're recognized.
Thank you for the question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know, actually. I think that's an interesting topic to talk through.
I do think that's a great idea, Representative. I hadn't thought about that, but it makes a lot of sense if I come in my example, to record a deed, and it's rejected, you should have the authority to write my name down, or if I presented my ID and ran out the door or something, you should be able to track that. Right. Yeah, exactly. Okay, we'll take a look at that. Who's next on my list? We got you. Representative Gant, you're recognized. That's all I have on my list right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question about the notary. So I didn't know that people were photoshopping notary stamps until the legislature addresses that part. Is a watermark a feasible option to prevent the copying of the notary signatures?
Ms. Clerk, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question. I think there are lots of ideas you can talk about protecting notaries. They are an essential part of this process. I'm not sure of their industry best practices or how you get their stamps. I know that they are in this fight with us. They want to do this, so I don't know if it's a watermark or an encryption or a redaction protection, or I don't know what those options are, but I think that would certainly be open for some conversation.
Representative Gant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do practice probate and estate planning, so I'm nerding out on this topic right now. Are you, or have you all, as the Clerks Association, consulted with the real property and probate section of the Water Bar?
Ms. Clerk, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question. Absolutely. They were an integral party to building 1419, and we had very passionate conversations about how this would impact all elements of their industry.
They frankly helped me draft the bill, so I yes. Representative McFarland, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So clearly we voted on this, we support it. You're the poster child of the pilot program. How are the other clerks feeling about implementing the ID card program? I understand we have some clerks with us today. I haven't checked in with Sarasota's clerk, Karen Rushing, to see what she wants, but like, what's the appetite?
Mr. Clerk, you recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question. I think that we need the pilot program to come to fruition a little bit more. I think we're in the infant stages of it, of getting to some really great questions, philosophical questions about the role of the clerk and what our responsibility is in this process. I'm honored to lead this program. I'm more of a risk-oriented person and say, hey, this is wrong. People spend money. They're victims of crime. And my partners around the state are saying, let's make sure that we talk about this. This is a big question. And so I think that we have some clerks who want to join the fight. Hillsborough and Miami-Dade are certainly willing to jump in. I think their insight and analysis to a pilot program is going to be invaluable. They're much larger than Lee County. But to answer your question, Representative, I think that clerks are all in this together. We get these questions, these reports, and we want to do something about it. And I think that we're open to some conversation and discussion on what those are. I think what I would leave you with is one step at a time.
Further questions? Clerk, you did a wonderful job. You've been a leader in this area. Thank you for the hours of time we spent last session creating this, and this is exactly what I had envisioned, at least personally, on kind of how this works, and to give you the expert. I'm not the expert. You're the expert. You deal with this every day, the authority along you know, with your team in Lee County, and then we'll see what good policy this bill passed unanimously, and you can see the bipartisan nature of this. We all have, as you put up on the screen, we all have constituents that have issues with this, so we'll continue to work on this, both this session and in future sessions, and I just thank you on behalf of the committee for taking the time to come up here and testify in front of us. Thank you.
It's an honor. Thank you for your leadership.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and thank you to all the other great clerks and what you all do, and you do very important work on behalf of your communities and certainly around the state, so thank you for coming. I think that's it. Members, there's no further business, so this concludes today's agenda. Representative Beltran moves we rise. Unless there's an objection upon the motion, Representative Beltran, this meeting is adjourned.